Welcome to the Java.net Community Corner podcast series for Java 1 2007. In this series of podcasts, we bring you the activity of the Community Corner, located at booth 408 on the Java 1 Pavilion floor, including mini talks about projects hosted on Java.net and other community activities.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to the Java.net Community Corner again. We're at the mini talks, and the noon speaker will a slight change in speaker order here. The speaker who is going to talk next is Alex Fung. He'll be talking about binding components and open JBI components. Alex?
Thank you. Today I'll be talking about binding components and open ESB. Most of you probably don't even know what those words mean. We'll get into that and explain exactly what binding components are and how they relate in the Java.net. My name is Alex Fung. I work for Sun Microsystems. I work for the SOA BI group, and I'm one of the architects for the binding components there. So the things that we'll be discussing today, first a quick overview of what JBI is, then a discussion about binding components and how that relates to JBI. Finally, a little bit, we'll finish up with how we fit into the Java.net open source initiative and partners that we already have in developing binding components. So first, what is JBI? Well, JBI 1.0 stands for Java Business Integration. It is a specification based on JSR 208 that allows third-party components to be plugged into a standard infrastructure. These components then can communicate using a normalized message router. So the whole point is that components will be able to interoperate in a predictable and reliable fashion over this normalized message router. So what does JBI specifically define? The two main things that are the most important is pluggability and interoperability. By pluggability for components, we mean that there's a standard set of interfaces for which components can implement and therefore work in a JBI runtime. By interoperability, what I mean there is that the JBI specification has defined how messages and how messages should be passed from one component to another. The JBI specification also defines an infrastructure and a mechanism for supporting service composition and composite applications. Now that's a mouthful, and what it really means is that we're defining how certain applications are deployed into the environment. So in JBI, they have applications that are called service assemblies, and they're deployed in a specific way. Another thing that is very important, bullet points 3 and 4, is that the communication logic and the business logic for your application is completely separated. So when I say communication logic, I mean how components talk to each other. That goes through a different track than the business logic which you might implement. Business logic might be implemented as a Java program, as a BPEL process, as an XSLT style sheet, whatever that is, but that's separated from how components will communicate to each other. Now, the communication logic is based on WSDL-defined messaging. So that's bullet point 3. Finally, JBI defines centralized installation and management and a standard for packaging, deploying, and managing not only the applications that are deployed into the JBI environment, but also the components themselves. So let's talk a little bit about what makes up a JBI runtime. Well, there are components. I've mentioned that a lot. I've talked about JBI components. And they're broken down into basically two things, service engines and binding components. Now, service engines are where the business logic resides. So in this diagram, you could see a BPEL SE. That's a container, a JBI component, that runs BPEL processes. Binding components, on the other hand, are pluggable external connectivity components. Basically, they allow you to communicate with the external world. Recall that within the JBI environment, components talk using the normalized message router, normalized messages. But the outside world, I mean, you could talk a variety of different protocols, different transports. So the way that those messages get into the system is through binding components. And that will be the focus of the next part of the presentation. Finally, as part of the JBI runtime, as I've alluded to before, there's this thing called the normalized message router. normalized message router basically allows components to talk to each other in a well-defined manner. Okay, let's go on and talk specifically now about binding components. Now, what is a binding component? I talked a little bit about this, but I want to go into more detail. It is a JBI component, and it allows for the sending and receiving of messages via particular protocols and transports. So one good example of a JBI binding component is the HTTP binding component. It allows HTTP messages to be sent outside the JBI environment and to receive HTTP messages. At that point, to communicate to other components, it's transformed into a normalized message. So what's the point of this binding components? Well, the key thing here is it isolates the JBI environment from a particular protocol. You know, you can't have very good interoperability if components have to talk HTTP to one another, or let's say some other protocol, SMTP or file or SNMP. So the point is that within the environment, you talk using the normalized message router. To talk to the external world, you use binding components. One thing that I want to highlight is you might be wondering, okay, so you have service engines and binding components. They seem very different. Semantically, yes. Service engines deal with business logic. Binding components deal with protocols. But implementation-wise, and what you actually have to implement, all the interfaces are the same. So it's more of a semantic understanding. So service engines can make calls to the external world. Binding components can execute some type of business logic. But the JBI spec tries to keep this distinction at least at the semantic level. It doesn't make that requirement at any of the interfaces that each of the component has to implement. So in our group at Sun Microsystems, we've sort of categorized binding components in three different ways. We've noticed this as we're building a whole bunch of binding components. This is useful to sort of for the developer of a binding component to get a sense of what a binding component is. First, you have protocol-oriented binding components. This is basically, it just transports messages from a consumer of a service to a provider of a service. HTTP is the best example of this. Basically, if you have a client and you have a server, when you want to send a message, HTTP is just protocol. It just takes the message, gets it to the server, gets the response, brings it back. On the different side of the spectrum, you have external system-oriented binding components. They're responsible for communicating with specific external systems, and the external system itself is viewed as a provider or consumer of a service. One example of this is an SAP binding component. If you have an SAP binding component, let's say on the client side, it's not doing any protocol. It's not sending messages to some server that implements some SAP protocol. No, the server in this case is the actual SAP external system. So as you can see, this particular binding component is actually, its sole responsibility is to communicate with the external system, either making direct calls through some proprietary SAP API or doing some whatever it takes to communicate with the external system. Finally, we have sort of the hybrid approach where you are communicating, a binding component is communicating with an external system, but the purpose of the external system is to transport messages. JMS is a key example of this, where you have one binding component, say the JMS binding component, and it's sending a message. But it's actually sending a message and communicating with the JMS server. And then the JMS server will route the message, and you'll get messages back. So it acts like a protocol, but the binding component itself is actually working with external system APIs, like the JMS API. So what are specific issues that we've run into when developing a binding component as opposed to a service engine? Well, as with most connector-based components like JCA in the Java EE standard, you have to manage external connections. You know, if you have an FTP binding component, there'll be connections. You don't want to just create connections randomly. So managing external connections is important. Another thing that we've had to deal with is that the normalized message router sits on one side of the binding component. The external system and what you communicate sits on the other side. So we have to do what is called normalization and denormalization. We have to take the message from the router and translate it to something that's specific to the external system. Most service engines don't have to do this. Most service engines just use the normalized message as it is, obviously as a binding component with its main purpose to communicate with the external world. We have to do that. We have to start and end transactions. If you don't know what transactions are, that's not a problem. That's something that most service engines don't have to deal with. And finally, we have to deal with discordant threading models. You know, external systems, a lot of them, you know, some of them are legacy systems, and they don't understand threading models. So they work on a threading model of, you know, blocking, single-threaded model. We have to translate that, and we have to account for that, because the JBI specification allows for asynchronous, synchronous communication and multiple threads. You might be wondering now, okay, so I get a sense of what binding components are. I understand that they're used to communicate with the external world. I know a little bit about JBI. So how about configuring these things? Well, we at Sun have found out that there are two main ways of configuring binding components. For configuring properties that are applicable to an entire binding component, use standard Java MBeans. Something like the number of threads that can be used, that applies to the entire binding component. If you want to configure external endpoints, though, or configure how to communicate to a particular endpoint, we use extensibility elements in a WSDL. And why do you do that? Well, JBI is based on SOA concepts and WSDL 2.0 messaging. So the natural extension is to use extensibility elements. So I have an example of what a configuration of a file binding component would look like. If you don't know WSDL, this isn't going to make much sense. But here, for this particular endpoint called located at my file service and file out, we've added extensibility elements called file colon address. And in the binding section, you have file colon message. And this basically describes all you need to connect to a file external system. So you might want to know more about learning about developing JBI components. Tonight we have something called that we've been marketing as JBI Evening. We have three BOFs, one right after the other, all about developing components for JBI, both service engines and binding components. JBI 2.0, the upcoming standard, and how we interact with Java EE. So let's talk a little bit now about the Java.NET open source initiative and how we fit in the binding components. First, as you can imagine, there are tons of protocols out there, tons of external systems. So we want to leverage the open source community to use and build a variety of binding components. You could create your own project for a particular binding component you're interested in, or you could contribute to an existing binding component. Right now we have a project there called open-JBI components. You could get there. We have over 30 components there where we use CVS and Maven. So it's very easy, it's free, it's open. You can look at it and get it right now and play around with these different components. So let's talk about some of the partners that have contributed already to binding components in the OpenJBI Java.NET project. First, we have a variety of individual contributors, maybe three or four individual contributors already. We have a variety of companies seeking to standardize on JBI and OpenESB. I believe, other than Sun, we have probably a total of 15 or more external committers and 10 or more companies contributing to this open source project. So it's very active. It's lots of traction happening at this particular project. Here I've put up a couple of the partners developing binding components. We have Imola. They did a talk yesterday about their particular components for Kix and for Corba. We have Gestalt, who's done the UDDI binding component, the SIP binding component, and a couple of others. Chain Builder, which is BozTech, they've contributed a TCP/IP binding component, and many more. So we're all, it's growing, it's thriving. We want community participation. So at this point, you know, if there are any questions, I'm available afterwards, but I'd like to thank you for listening. And basically, I'm very excited about the technology that's happening and working in the open source community. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you. That was Binding Components and OpenJBI components with Alex Fung. We'll take a break for about 10 minutes here, set up Peter Pilgrim, and he'll be speaking about re-architecting legacy J2EE applications with Spring and Hibernate. Peter, step up, and we'll go ahead and start swapping your equipment in.
This has been the Java.net Community Corner Podcast. Check out more mini talks from Java 1 2007 at today.java.net/pub/ct/Java 1 Community Corner, or subscribe to our feed with iTunes.